Chris Payne is on the phone. He's the director of a new documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car? He sent me a videotape of it, so I got to take an advance look at it last night. And I got to tell you, I was not familiar with the trials and tribulations of people who owned the electric car, you know, starting in the mid-90s, and it was killed off by General Motors a couple of years ago. It would seem like GM is the primary culprit in this, but in watching the movie, Chris brings in a lot of other suspects as well. So I've invited him here to KMOX this afternoon to talk about it. Hi, Chris.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Congratulations on the movie.
Thank you. I hope people get to see it.
I hope they do. It's going to open up here in St. Louis a week from tomorrow. And when we're talking about the electric car, we're talking about something you actually owned and liked driving, right?
Yes, I didn't expect to. I thought, well, a car that, you know, I have to plug in and so forth, I'm not sure that was going to work. But, boy, this thing impressed me.
We're talking about bringing your movie out at a time that I think is perfect for it, because gas prices are at $3 a gallon, higher in other parts of the country. Sometimes St. Louis leads the rest of the country, sometimes not. But we're right around that $3 mark. Do you think if the electric car were brought out today, there would be better consumer acceptance than there was in the 90s when it first came out?
Absolutely. And I think people are just, you know, they're tired of paying so much for gasoline, and people will be much more willing to look at something like a plug-in car. And that's sort of the heart of the crime of our murder mystery here is why aren't there plug-in cars available as an option in the marketplace?
Now let's talk a little bit about the environmental side of this, because the plug-in car not having an internal combustion engine didn't create any emissions, but there's the argument that to make the electricity we got to burn coal, and isn't that bad for the environment?
Well, that's a great argument, and certainly that was the argument that the oil industry made in California about why electric cars are just moving pollution somewhere else. But, you know, the good news on electric cars is study after study has shown that you reduce your total emissions by at least 50% of CO2 and nitrogen pollutions by almost 100%. And as your power grid gets less and less coal on it, hopefully that's where we're moving, you get a cleaner and cleaner car.
For those of us who never drove an electric car, or frankly, I never even saw one, were they available outside of California?
They were available in Arizona briefly as well, but even most Californians didn't know they were available. You know, California passed a law requiring car makers to put alternatives on the road, and they made several thousand of these cars, but they kept the program pretty quiet. And that was sort of the when we began to think that maybe there was a bigger story here that we needed to make a movie about.
The only people I ever saw talking about it were Ed Begley Jr. from St. Elsewhere and Tom Hanks that night on the Letterman show. You include clips from that in the movie. Was it just something that the so-called Hollywood elite were eating up and the rest of us weren't ever going to have a shot at?
Well, when we were reporting the story, it turned out that the cars were so difficult to get that you practically had to be a Hollywood celebrity to get one. Even Mel Gibson had to fill out this huge resume when he heard about these cars. And that was just a shame because many people felt like no one really got a chance to try these things out except for a few very select people.
Why did General Motors lease them instead of selling them?
Well, again, it's a controversial topic, but many people feel like they were anxious to get them off the road once they were able to kill the program in California. And by having a lease, once your lease was up, you would say, hey, I want to keep my car. I want to buy out the residual value. And they'd say, no, you have to turn it back in. So that was very disappointing for a lot of people that had these cars.
So even before they brought it to market, they were thinking about how they were going to get it off the market?
Well, that's exactly what our film looks like. It's like, what were they thinking? What was going on behind the scenes? And many people feel like that's exactly what was happening.
Tell me what it was like to drive the EV1, I know Toyota came out with the RAV4 electric version. Ford had an electric vehicle. I don't know if Chrysler ever came out with one. But you had one of the General Motors EV1s, right?
Right. And my mom and dad, they had one of the Honda cars, and we had friends who had the Ford pickup truck, and everybody who drove these really liked them. They were skeptical at first, but boy, once they got used to never going to the gas station and having a car that was pretty snappy, it was a pretty easy sell.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, my EV1, for example, would accelerate from 0 to 60 in about 7 seconds, very, very fast. And I think the first one they had broke the land speed record at 180 miles an hour when they put special batteries in it.
And when you were driving it, was it noisy?
No, it was like being in a Jetson helicopter or something. It's like, boom, right, really, really space age.
You just heard that kind of electric hum
Exactly.
And where did you plug it in?
You plug it in your garage at night, and, you know, for the first car, you get most of your charge in about 45 minutes. With the cars that got like 130, 150-mile range, that could take like 4 hours to charge. So it's definitely like plugging in overnight, and every morning your car is full and ready to go.
So if you're somebody like me who basically uses the car to tool around town and commute to and from work 25 or 30 miles, you know, if you're doing about 60 miles round trip in a day, maybe 70 or 75, would the car last that long?
Oh, yeah, easily. And that's exactly what makes them so great, because most Americans are like you and drive about 30 miles a day. But for people that were worried about longer ranges, you know, this is where these plug-in hybrids come in, that after you use that first 50 miles of U.S. domestic electricity in your batteries, you can switch to a flexible fuel like gasoline to take you on a longer trip.
Are the hybrids that are coming out now, and, well, you know, have been out for a few years but are actually starting to take off now, are they based on any of the same technology as the all-electric vehicle?
They do. They have many components, and for GM, it's a small tragedy because they had to jump on the Japanese on this technology by a couple of years, and they just got too caught up in the fight in California to keep their technology on top of the game. But the issue with the hybrids today are still that they require gasoline to run, and they do get better mileage, which is terrific, but hopefully they'll add plug-in features in the next few years so we can all start using more electricity.
Now, let me see if I understand you, because as I'm watching the movie, I wasn't 100% sure on this point, so I want you to explain it a little bit more. Detroit was actually ahead of the game, then Tokyo got ahead of the game because Detroit was so worried about the electric car that it was working harder to kill it than to make it evolve. Am I right?
Exactly. They weren't making money on the first ones they were making, and they said, you know what, we're making so much money on SUVs, let's just scrap this thing. And meanwhile, the Japanese, which in this case had sort of a longer-range plan, they said, you know what, we're content to lose money for a year, because what if gas prices go up? It'd be nice to have a high-mileage car. And now they're in charge of the market, and Detroit is running to catch up.
So the electric vehicles that GM and the other automakers came out with, they were not going to be a profit center for them in the 90s?
Well, not in the first, you know, they're such car companies are so quarterly based, they weren't seeing money on the table, and they were so busy protecting their profits with other cars, they just wanted to get the electric car out of the way.
One of the people who's featured in your movie for just a few seconds is Roger Smith, who was the CEO of General Motors, became a little more famous than that because of Michael Moore's movie, Roger and Me. But he was a big proponent of the electric vehicle. What happened there?
Well, isn't that funny that he was sort of like the villain in Michael Moore's movie? And in this case, he was really a visionary for the electric car at GM. Unfortunately, after he got this program launched, the board of directors fired him, or he had to step down. So lots of controversy about that behind the scenes.
As I was watching the movie, and especially as you move towards the conclusion, and you name the various suspects from big oil to auto companies to the government, particularly in California, and consumers as well, I kept coming back to the oil companies in my mind, looking at this and saying, well, if these things really do take off, that is seriously going to hurt us, and it's a multi-trillion-dollar industry we're talking about. Do you think as we go forward with other alternatives in forms of energy for vehicles, that big oil is trying to and likely to crush those as well?
Well, they claim to be in support of alternative energies. You know, the oil industry does. But the facts in our story, and this is where our movie goes into our little murder mystery, is that they are actively working to discourage alternatives. They didn't want the utilities to get into the transportation business. And the oil companies are going to have to get out of the way so that you know, our society can march forward. That's my view.
Are they going to have to be forced out of the way?
It's going to take some regulation and some government muscle to give other energy forms a good break so they can compete with the, you know, with the oil prices and so forth.
What about the president's call in the State of the Union a couple of years ago and again this year to push us towards a hydrogen fuel cell?
Yeah, when we reported this story, the hydrogen fuel cell just doesn't stack up. It takes, you know, 3 to 4 times more energy to make the hydrogen for these cars than if you had just put that energy into the car in the first place. So we really feel, a lot of the folks in our film after this story, is that the better investment would be batteries and plug-in cars than chasing hydrogen fuel cells for the next 10 years.
And I know you said that they are working on some of those, but are they talking about mass marketing anything like that again anytime soon?
The car companies are playing it very quiet. They're talking about concept cars, but they're not talking about putting them on the road. And some people feel that's because plug-in cars have so much less theoretical maintenance. You have no, in a pure electric, you have no carburetor, no transmission, and the aftermarket is huge for the gas car. So it's a threat to the way they do business.
How much did your EV1 cost? I know you were leasing it, so we're talking about a monthly expense. What was that?
I think I was, you know, right off the bat, I was paying $399 a month. And when I got I think by the end of the lease, they had dropped it to something like $299 because they were discontinuing the program.
How did you find out? How did you find out that they were going to be taking your car back?
Well, I had taken my car in to have a brake light looked at, and I called up and said, "Hey, is my car ready?" And they go, "Oh, well, we're just going to keep it." And I went, "Well, I have two more months on my lease," and they said, "Oh, I'm sorry, we need the car back. We'll give you a loaner car." And I asked them, "Hey, could I get my gym bag back out of that car?" So they sent that to me. So I, you know, I don't have all grubs with GM, but I really think they made a huge mistake in destroying these cars.
And when you say you would take it home and plug it in your garage, do you mean you would just take it and like hook it up to a regular extension cord, or was there something else that had to be there?
Yeah, well, you could do it either way. You could either just plug it into any wall in your house, and that did take like 12 hours. So that was only if you were like stuck somewhere, which rarely happened. But the better way to do it is they had a little charger that was like a washing machine in, you know, 220. That was a fast charger. So they just installed that in your garage, and then you charge right up.
Okay, but if we had those today and people were buying these en masse and you wanted to have one of those chargers, you probably would it come with the car, or would you have to pay?
Yeah. Yeah, it came with the car. It was part of the thing. Part of the car price was, here's your charger. And the power company put it in your house. And you know, right now, the utilities could charge, if these cars were on the road, 30 to 60 million cars every night with no additional power plants, because, you know, a lot of electricity doesn't get used at night. So it's a shame that we don't have more of them right now, given our energy crisis.
And the electric companies would probably be more than happy to put these in, knowing that you would be plugging in your car and using more electricity. It would be like a razor and razor blades kind of thing.
Yes, and they'd be especially happy if you were charging at night when they have more electricity available. But, you know, the electric companies, the oil companies went after the utilities in California when the story was happening, and it just seemed like such a good metaphor for why we're having such a tough time getting off of oil, because there's a lot of vested interests that don't want us to do it.
The movie is called Who Killed the Electric Car? It debuts here in St. Louis next Friday, the 28th. Chris Payne, the director, did a great job with the movie, and I particularly like the part where you got in the helicopter and then intercut yourself with the GM liar, their spokesperson, saying, "Oh, yeah, all the parts of the car are being recycled," and there you are with the helicopter showing, "No, they're all being crushed and shredded."
Yeah, I wish it wasn't true, but it certainly makes for an entertaining part of our documentary, even if it's really sad on some level.
All right, so there's the question. Would you rather have the car or your movie?
Oh, I'd rather have Americans have plug-in cars right now than to have my movie, but at least I'm glad that, you know, that the story's getting out now, and I hope a lot of people get it so we can figure out the way out of this mess.
It is a great story, and a nice job on the movie, Chris. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Chris Payne, director of Who Killed the Electric Car, here on the Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.